NASDAQ Composite Index is down 1.3%, 42 points to 32.12. Treasuries are rising today to the 10-year yield now, down more than 6 basis points to 1.79%. A real deterioration here. We're seeing the yen strengthen, 92.78 yen to the US dollar. And the euro just a little stronger today to 128.46. Crude oil futures down more than 2%, $2.20 to $94.99 a barrel right now. And gold futures down to $15.53 an ounce. That's a drop of $23 or 1.5% today. Financial shares are tumbling, and we're also seeing energy companies sinking on those oil price declines. A gauge of home builders also down 4.5%. Pulte Group is slipping about 6% today. We had some poor economic data. The ADP jobs report short of estimates. It came in at 158,000. And the ISM services gauge also disappointed, down to 54.4 in March from 56. In particular, the new orders and employment components cooling off there. And it is the 40th anniversary of the first mobile phone call ever made. It was back in 1973, and it was Motorola's Martin Cooper, AT&T's research division's competitor, a device that was 9 inches tall. It took 10 hours to recharge. Well, he doesn't take 10 hours to recharge. We'll go around the world now in 60 seconds with Bloomberg's Irv Chapman in Washington.
He didn't use it in his car either. Vani, North Korea prevented South Korean workers from entering a jointly run industrial park today, adding to tensions after saying it would restart a mothballed nuclear plant and threatening to attack South Korea. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said he'd had a long conversation with China's new defense minister, in which he discussed, among other things, the Korean situation.
Certainly the Chinese don't want a right now complicated combustible situation to explode into a worse situation. That's not in their interest. The Chinese have shown their leadership to be steady, wise, careful.
Hagel also said the Pentagon should use defense budget reductions as an opportunity to cut waste, re-examine weapon systems, and reorganize 30-year-old command structures. Another consequence of the budget cuts has been a growing number of lawsuits against the government to reverse the shutdown of air traffic control operations at smaller airports. The latest come from Central Illinois Regional Airport in Burlington and Ohio State University Airport in Columbus. There's also been a lawsuit filed by a group called Friends of LaGuardia Airport. That's the news you need now more than ever, Vani.
Irv Chapman in Washington, D.C., thank you so much. Well, now we want to take our market drivers report. There are plenty of them today, and we're very lucky to have Libby Salisbury from our first word desk back in studio with us. An unexpected pleasure. And Libby, Tesla out after the close yesterday. We had a press conference from Elon Musk. He announced this new financing, 10% down. Wells Fargo, U.S. Bancorp, tie up there. And Tesla today is down 8.5%, $3.74 to $40.62. Investors not really impressed.
Yes, I think it was less that they were unimpressed with the actual news, but more that it sort of fell short of expectations. There was a lot of hype surrounding this announcement. CEO Elon Musk had tweeted last week, there's a really exciting news to come out, and everyone was very hyped up. They had big news out on Sunday saying they would report their first profitable quarter in the first quarter of this year. And so there was a lot of investor excitement around that. Shares were up 16% on Monday. And then this announcement just was not quite as exciting as people were expecting, given the hype.
He promised four more, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He said today's or last night's announcement was the second in a five-part series, which means there is more news to come from Tesla. No one is quite sure, you know, about the nature of those, but
keep them waiting. Well, we're just actually getting some headlines now across the Bloomberg. Very interesting headlines that Tesla solicited customers to complete orders by March 31st, so they would, in fact, be included in the first quarter. But there's
right.
Nothing wrong with that, right? I get solicitations all the time in the mail.
Not quite. I'm sure anyone who's been to a car dealership to buy a car on the 29th of a month can tell you that they've experienced some pressure on that front, too. So,
very good. And do we have any idea what these next three announcements might be?
Not quite sure. People are still kind of parsing the data of from last night's announcement. You know, there are some numbers in there that he says that the cost to own a mid-range Model S would be less than $500 a month in the statement. And that's while that might be true, but that factors in a lot of that factors in gas costs, that factors in even factors in time, your opportunity cost to go to the gas pump and fill up your gas. So there are a lot of extenuating factors, and really the out-of-pocket cost is more, $1,100.
Right, because I believe it's also for people who can write it off as a business expense, for example. Say, okay, very good. All right, Libby Salaberry, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bonnie.
We will see you again from our first word desk.
Bonnie Quinn, thank you so very much. In our New York studio, Kathleen Hayes here in St. Louis, the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. Thanks again to Jim Buller. Just spent an hour with us talking about the economy and monetary policy. We want to move on now to another topic that isn't so much a part directly of monetary policy, but a very important part of what's going on in our economy, a new Center for Financial Stability that is in the works here at the St. Louis Fed. And the two people who are leading this are our guests now. Let me start with Ray Boshara. He's senior advisor here at the St. Louis Fed and the director of the Center for Household Financial Stability. He, prior to joining the Fed in April of 2011, was the vice president at the New America Foundation in Washington. He's advised presidential candidates from the Bush, Clinton, and Obama administrations on, and leading policymakers worldwide. So Ray brings to us the Washington policy angle on this. And then Bill Emmons. He's chief economist at the Center for Household Financial Stability, assistant vice president economist here at the St. Louis Fed, and his areas of focus include household balance sheets and how they affect the broader economy. They are doing some very interesting work. So happy, gentlemen, that you could join us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, Ray, let's start with you. What is this new center all about?
The center is looking at household balance sheets, family balance sheets, and why they matter for helping families move forward in the broader economy.
And that means their debt, their
earnings. Yeah, traditionally, most economic research is focused on what families earn and consume, their incomes. We're trying to look at what you own and what you owe, your net worth, your savings, your debts. Basically, your net worth is probably the best measure of the household balance sheet.
And the household balance sheets got pretty battered during the Great Recession.
That's an understatement.
That's right. The Fed's best data suggests that close to 40% declines in the median inflation-adjusted net worth of an American household between 2007 and 2010.
Well, one of the interesting things I think that the poverty, you know, income inequality and the growing gap, you're looking at things in a different way. You're taking a lot of data, a lot of observations, but seeing things in a way that perhaps will provide more clarity now.
Yes, that's correct. Poverty policy in particular, really, if you're talking about the bottom half of the population, for most of the 20th century was focused on helping people move forward by increasing their incomes, whether through wages or other strategies or social policy. And, the focus shifted then, I'd say about 20 years ago, to looking at what families save and own. And that was a big breakthrough, you know, your assets, not just your income, and helping families move forward. Since the recession, I think we now have to look at debt and the entire balance sheet in determining, you know, which families move forward and which ones don't. So it's a new conceptual framework, and I think within the Federal Reserve System, looking at the household as a unit of analysis is new as well.
That's right. And I think, as Ray said before, economists mostly have focused on income consumption. To the extent that we've looked at financial measures, balance sheet types of measures, we do talk about wealth effects. So increases in the stock market or in house prices, we think, do have an effect on consumer spending. But we really haven't been able to incorporate the debt, the liability side of the balance sheet, how that affects certainly on the way down when people feel they have too much debt, but even on the way up. And I think this is something that is getting more attention also, that in thinking about how the boom played out, how it happened, a lot of it was debt finance, and I think certainly with some the benefit of hindsight, a lot of it looks unsustainable at this point. People's borrowing really was based more on appreciating house prices in many cases than realistic income prospects.
As a matter of fact, if you look at the last 10 years, we set a lot of records in pursuit of this American dream of homeownership. We had the highest rate of homeownership and the highest concentration of wealth in homeownership ever recorded. We also ran up our debts to finance these houses, and we had the highest personal debt-to-income ratio ever recorded. Our savings reached a record low as well. You know, it's really remarkable, you know, these balance sheet failures that we managed to reach, you know, in the last decade in pursuit of home ownership. And I think you could say that leverage was the price that we paid for the American dream, and in many ways are still paying.
Well, it's funny, you know, the Washington Post actually has an article this morning, not sure if you managed to see it, saying the Obama administration is pushing banks now to make home loans to people with weaker credit. Could we be starting off on a whole new cycle of this?
I think it's unlikely that we will see something unfold in the near future like what happened just before the crash. But I think, you know, your point is well taken that I think we probably should be very cautious about how aggressively public policy or even business strategies and individual households, how they think about borrowing. That's really one of the goals of the project is to, with the benefit of hindsight, as I say, really think more about the way households manage their balance sheets, the assets, the diversification of assets, how that's financed. And so, you know, the point about maybe trying to expand access to credit for, you know, households maybe a little bit weaker, I think does raise some questions.
And we've got a lot more questions with Ray Boshara and Bill Emmons because if you can't build wealth, you get stuck. You can get stuck at the bottom, and they have a lot of ideas about what has happened to some of the most vulnerable groups in the economy and maybe some things that could be done to help them get out of this trap. If you already have some wealth and some education and a good job, it isn't such an issue. But for the bottom, it is. Find out why and what they're thinking about next.
For photography enthusiasts, our optics are second to none, and Willoughby's on 31st and 5th is the only Leica boutique in New York City, featuring our full selection on display. And with Leica cameras and binoculars starting at around $700, it's an affordable luxury everyone can appreciate.
Visit the Leica boutique at Willoughby's and see the full selection of German precision-engineered Leica camera equipment. Willoughby's, since 1898, New York City's boutique camera store at the corner of 5th Avenue and 31st Street.
I'm a cabbie, and here's a tip. Don't ask a New Yorker what their favorite anything is. Check this out.
Excuse me, ma'am, your favorite restaurant?
My favorite? Well, it depends. I mean, if my mood is Italian, Chinese, French.
See what I mean?
Sir, your favorite New York team?
Whoa, you talking baseball, football, hockey, or basketball? Because
okay, gotcha. Thank you. New York. It's hard to choose anything. You've got 80 museums, 40 Broadway theaters, 60,000 hotel rooms. On the other hand, St. Mary's Healthcare System for Children is the choice for kids who need specialized rehabilitation and medical care. St. Mary's now has the only state-of-the-art children's rehab facility here in the city. The only one.
At St. Mary's, we care for over 4,000 children with medically complex conditions each day. At our hospital, at home, and in the community, as they recover from stroke, injury, congenital illness, or premature birth.
To learn more or to simply be inspired, visit stmaryskids.org. That's stmaryskids.org. St. Mary's, where we believe in possible.
This portion of the Hayes Advantage brought to you by Prestige Motors. Prestige Motors offers luxury brands and experience at non-luxury prices during April's Mercedes-Benz CPO event. Visit prestigemb.com. Prestige, driven to perfection. 216 on Wall Street, 116 here in St. Louis, here at the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, where we are talking with the two people responsible for setting up what is going to be the Center for Household Financial Stability. Households, what's happening to families, a very important part of what is happening to the economy. We're going to continue our conversation with Ray Boshara and Bill Emmons in just a moment, but have to run you through the markets as we do every 15 minutes throughout the trading day here on Bloomberg Radio. Stocks are lower across the board. Let me give you those numbers. We've got the S&P 500, and it is down now by about 0.1%. So it has definitely narrowed the day's loss to about 15.5 points. We've got the level of 1554. The Dow is down nearly 0.7%. That's 97 points to 14,564. And the NASDAQ down 1.1%. So the sell-off continues, 36 points lower on the NASDAQ to 3218. As stocks sell off, the bond rally has extended. The benchmark 10-year up nearly a half point. That yield down to 1.81%, with the 30-year down more than a point. The yield at 3.05% now. The euro up 0.2% against the dollar, trading at 1.2847, with the yen gaining 0.7%. Dollar-yen rate down to 92.79. NYMEX crude is down by nearly 2.8% now, $2.69 a barrel to $94.51, with gold down 1.4%, $22.50 an ounce to $1,553.40. And this Bloomberg Business Flash is brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Time to consider a stock alternative. Visit sectorsbdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. The big force today on stocks, on bonds, is worse than estimated data on the U.S. economy. Once again, after some optimism spurred by some better numbers, these numbers creating a little bit of a dark cloud over the market today. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. So let's get right back to our guests, looking at the household financial stability, so important to the St. Louis Fed that they are setting up a new center, and they're looking at it from the standpoint of government policy, also the standpoint of how household debt or wealth, how that affects the economy. One of their premises is that one of the reasons the recovery has been so weak is that there's weak household balance sheets. So just I want you to come back to you on that point, Bill, because I don't think it's a focus people have. We look at what auto output is. We look at, you know, hiring. But this is something that I would assume is it sort of exists all the time in the background almost, but you're bringing it to the forefront.
I think that's right. There are always people who are trying to pay down their debt or slow their accumulation of debt. But what seems to be true right now is that this is so much more widespread. There are many families that just feel they have too much debt, in some cases to the point that they were unable to continue to maintain it. So, we've had the foreclosure waves, personal bankruptcies. And then, you know, there's a huge group of people who haven't succumbed to that debt but are trying to adjust to it. And so that means maybe taking on less debt, paying it down a little faster, refinancing into shorter mortgages that pay down faster. And it appears that even families that are not under a great deal of pressure are cautious. And so it's really very much of a phenomenon where everything is kind of feeding back on itself. And I think that a big part of that is that there is uncertainty about how strongly consumers can bounce back.
What did you find out about where the difficulties are concentrated, the hardships?
Yes, that's a very much of a focus of our efforts. Let me just very quickly outline the data that we're looking at. This is a survey done by the Federal Reserve every 3 years called the Survey of Consumer Finances. The Fed's been doing this, really goes back into the 1960s, but the current version of this survey dates from about 1989. And so this is a very detailed snapshot at a point in time of the balance sheet and some other measures of household financial behavior and attitudes. And it was over 6,000 households in 2010. So that's the most recent data we have. So we looked very closely at the numbers from that survey and compared it to previous surveys. And what we found was that some groups really stand out for having damaged balance sheets. And I'll explain a little bit more as I go. In particular, younger families, so we're talking about families and individuals in their 20s and 30s, had extremely large losses of wealth. So as Ray mentioned, net worth is one of our measures, but we also look at things like leverage, how much debt versus assets, debt-to-income ratios, how much in liquid assets families have. So young families seem to have been very much affected. Also, families and individuals with lower levels of education, so less than a college degree. Also, very large declines in wealth, percentage declines, and also members of what we call historically disadvantaged minority groups, African Americans and Hispanics of any race. So those seemed to kind of jump out almost as risk factors, and they are, to a sense, additive in that young, less educated minority families, for example, did show extreme stress on average.
When it comes to policy, though, Ray, we were talking before the show that it's not hopeless in a sense, because under certain circumstances, even the young minority, without poor people, will save money and do the right thing when it comes to their balance sheet.
Yes, that's correct. I've been involved in demonstration projects over the last 20 years showing that very disadvantaged people and people with very low incomes can save and build wealth if offered the opportunity.
And what do you mean by offered the opportunity?
Structure. Think about your employer who helps you set up your 401k. Think about your tax return, which helps you deduct mortgage interest. These are very easy ways for employers and governments to basically transfer wealth, you know, from one entity to another. And we learned that if you situate those structures, whether through nonprofits or credit unions, government, you know, in very low-income communities, that low-income people, just like everybody else, will save and build wealth.
Is this something that can be affected at the local level, or do we need a federal policy?
Very much at the local level, and federal policy would help a great deal. As a matter of fact, most of the innovation in this area has occurred at the local level, and we've been working with policymakers to replicate those successes. Policy's been a barrier, actually, for lower-income families. You and I take advantage of tax breaks to make retirement savings and buy homes and investments. Low-income people can't take those tax breaks, but also the government actually says we're going to penalize you if you try to save and build wealth and still want to receive public assistance.
So, Bill, in terms of policy, not Fed policy, and how are you watching the economy, how is the Center for Household Financial Stability going to integrate into contribute to what the Federal Reserve broadly is doing right now?
I think the most direct effect that we will have is in working in the consumer protection area. As you probably know, the Federal Reserve is still very much involved in consumer protection along with the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and I think some of the results from the data suggest that particular populations were not well served prior to the downturn, and so I think it at least provides a factual basis for maybe saying that there do need to be some standards and protections built in.
And I would just add that I think, as you know, Congress can only do so much to help families rebuild their balance sheets. Where do they target their efforts? And our research suggests that young families, mm-hmm. starting as early as birth, would be a great idea.
Well, gentlemen, I feel like we just got started. We're going to have to revisit this. Thanks so much to Bill Emmons and Ray Boshara on Monday, April 8th. Bill's going to be holding a dialogue with the Fed. It's here at the St. Louis Fed, but if you wanted to watch it stream online, stlouisfed.org/live. You'll be able to catch that. And, of course, the St. Louis Fed's really good about posting things on their website. Like our interviews today, Hayes Advantage live at the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. Kathleen Hayes, Bonnie Quinn. We'll be back with Glenn Hubbard next.